Hello and welcome to Frankly Speaking, where we dive deep into regional headlines. I speak with leading policymakers and business leaders. I am Katie Jensen. On today's show, we turn our attention to the ongoing war in Ukraine, where Russia's recent annexation of four borderline territories has signaled a dangerous escalation in the eight-month-long crisis. Today, we speak with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky to understand how this changes the dynamics on the ground. Does he welcome indirect negotiations, given the success of the recent Saudi-sponsored prisoner swap? And what does he have to say about the constant delays his country faces in its bid to join NATO? President Zelensky, thank you for joining us on Frankly Speaking. Now, Russia has just announced the annexation of four Ukrainian territories, territories which it says voted to join the Russian Federation. Now, Moscow has also vowed to protect these territories. They've issued nuclear weapon threats and they've enlisted more troops. So, frankly speaking, 8 months into this conflict, can you envision a scenario where Ukraine can emerge victorious? And do you think you'll ever be able to regain these Ukrainian territories?
Yeah, thank you for this question. It's, about having to do business with the state which is a terrorist, which is in blatant violation of international law and is a blatant liar. And what they declare is clearly different from what they can. They said they will occupy our territory, our nation, but in 8 months of the war, I can tell you that we won back another yet city, the city of Liman in Donetsk Oblast, exactly the one that Russia declared as fully occupied a couple of days ago. And they said they had referendum and all the residents of Donetsk, Luhansk, Kherson, and Zaporizhia Oblast, all of them voted for separating from Ukraine and joining the Russian Federation. So meanwhile, we congratulate Donetsk Oblast with this pseudo-referendum, and we continue deoccupying towns and settlements there. As regards Zaporizhia Oblast, another example of the lie, the city of Zaporizhia is the biggest one in the oblast, which is strongly in Ukraine. And I'm not sure what kind of referendums they had. We don't have any such referendums in Ukraine. We don't have any law even for that purpose. So I think this is a bloody PR based on human victims. And I can tell you just one thing, that we are deoccupying our territory on a daily basis, and this will continue until we reach our legal borders. And I can assure Russia and the Russian people that, unlike Russia, we are not interested in Russian territories. We are interested in our territory, in our borders, internationally recognized one from 1991.
So what would a victory in this war look like for you? Do you think it will be possible to reclaim these territories at some stage?
For us, victory is, in us uniting. I think it's a great victory for any nation worldwide when its people are united and people are able to leave some minor squabbles and historical discrepancies. This is very important. Another important step is that we are advancing against the world's second biggest army. And we are able to show that the true strength is in unity, not in armaments. The third victory is we have been able to unite Europe and the whole world. Before it was much more like everyone stands for him or herself. Now we see this unification and we see that there will be many more challenges also internationally. And there will be more of them, but we already serve the example how the world can unite against them. And if the world isn't too Gaul flexed it about its support of Ukraine, we definitely will come victorious. Again, setting even better example to every autocratic state planning or intending to grab any other neighbor country. This will be a sure indicator. And the last factor of victory for us will be to come to our borders, internationally recognized ones, that Russia also recognized in due time, as of 1991, when we gained independence as the nation. So these are components of our victory.
Well, there's certainly still some major challenges in the way. Let's talk about some of the events that have unfolded since the recent annexation of these territories. Now, firstly, you signed an urgent request to accelerate your application for NATO membership. And secondly, President Putin has offered to directly negotiate with you for the end of the war. Now, you have said that you will negotiate with Russia. However, you said not with President Putin. You said you will only negotiate with a new Russian president. Now, with all due respect, both of these scenarios seem quite unlikely under the current circumstances. Wouldn't you agree?
As a president, you know, I may be liked or disliked by someone. These are subjective things. But I'm a man of my words. I've always stood for peace. And only because of Russia, I had to turn into a president of a country at war because of the attacks. I tried for 3 years to find a peaceful way. I tried to talk to the Russian Federation for us to end the war in diplomatic way to avoid human losses. That was the only thing I wanted, and I suggested it many times. And yes, we had exchanges, we had different formats and steps like Normandy and others. But then we got the message from the president who simply wants to eat, swallow our nation in one go, destroying our people. And this is the man who comes up with ultimatums. And I can tell you that I try to keep my word. So if we are attacked, we have to defend ourselves according to our constitution, my pledge to our people. We are defending our country. This is what we will do, and we will reach our borders. It's just a matter of time. I'm not sure what can we talk about with the president of Russia, who says he wants negotiations, but parallel to that, launches those sham referendums, tortures people, rapes our women. I'm not sure what we can talk about with bloody butchers and terrorists. And because of that, we warned them. You did warn them. If you want to launch these fake referendums, there will be no further talks with the president of the Russian Federation. For if the Russian president cannot respect the law, the international law, the constitution, and by the way, not just our constitution, but that of his own country, he should not be violating our territorial integrity. If this happens, am I in a position to talk to him? He is not a president. He cannot guarantee even the observance of constitution in his own country. This is just another man for me, another person, another representative of the aggressor country. And yes, this is why we said that we are ready for negotiations, but with another yet president of Russia who will be capable, authorized to keep to his word.
Okay, well, those feelings about President Putin are certainly crystal clear. But let's talk a little bit about NATO, because as I mentioned earlier, you've obviously signed an urgent application to try and accelerate your membership into NATO. But given recently your closest ally in the war, the US, we've seen the American National Security Advisor, Jake Sullivan, on September 30, just days ago, he came out and said that your NATO membership should take place in a different process, under a different situation. So if the US is your closest ally in the war, if that is their position, it feels like your NATO membership is further away than ever. Wouldn't you agree?
I think we should pay attention just to the facts, not just to the words. We had statements from 10 allies, NATO members, with the support, full support of Ukraine. And I think yesterday there was a statement of Canada and other, well, representatives of European nations. I think it's a matter of time. Yes, there are certain complexities because when we talk about NATO membership during the wartime in the, on the territory of Ukraine, yeah, but we speak of accelerated procedure because we see the fact of Finland, Sweden, who enjoy this accelerated procedure. I think we can have the same right. It's, yes, a matter of when the war ends, but already on this way towards the end of war, we need security guarantees. This is what the application about. We need to see support from our partners. We do understand that for us to be a NATO member, we need to see their unanimous decision. But already on this way, they will have to show the nature of their support of Ukraine. They need to be able to guarantee our security guarantees. And they will have to show that they really want this, because again, we talk about unity and support. And we are thankful to the United States. Believe me, they will be ready when the time comes.
So President Zelensky, when do you think you will be accepted into NATO then? If I can press you for a timeline, do you think we see this year, next year? What are you expecting?
I would really like to see it come as soon as possible. I would rather say not when in terms of time, but in terms of geography. I think it might happen when we will be standing at our borders.
Now, a number of countries have offered to mediate between you and Moscow, including Saudi Arabia, Israel and Turkey. Now, before I ask you about the kingdom and its ongoing efforts, how open is Kyiv to these indirect talks and peace negotiations, specifically from these countries as well as others?
We are open to any proposals when it is about the results to be achieved, the result of such efforts, whether it is exchange of prisoners. We have guys headed by our intelligence service who are talking to mediators in an attempt to ensure exchange of as many prisoners of war as possible. And this has already happened. And by the way, I'd like to thank Saudi Arabia for the effort that you mentioned. And the latest effort was quite good. We were able to really bring back more than 205 residents, also nationals of other countries. And it was in Saudi Arabia that we were able to exchange a couple of US, British, Croatian, Morocco, Sweden nationals. So quite nice initiative. Also, there is another initiative like the grain initiative. When we see that there is a certain process that works with mediation, and it surely brings results, and we do support it externally and internally. The process was chaired by UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, and together with Turkey, we have been able to create this safety corridor for this grain initiative, just for the sake of supplying our agricultural produce to African and Asian countries. I think this is quite a positive result. So I do support every such initiative.
I want to ask you a little bit more about this successful prisoner exchange that Saudi Arabia helped mediate between you and Moscow. Can you tell us any further details? Is this the first of many? And why was it that the kingdom was chosen as the trusted partner to mediate between both sides?
Well, I had information from my intelligence based on the communication with intelligence services from a variety of countries, and that was what we were offered. I was told that we can get some of our people already in Ukraine, and there are also several places that can work as mediators. And we had from our international partners a selection of So we had talks with the five countries I already mentioned about their nationals, and we had contacts with Saudi Arabia, among other countries, and it did work. I will tell you openly that we also work. It also worked nicely with Turkey. We had our several servicemen staying there. They were threatened with tortures and time behind bar in Russia. Meanwhile, they're recovering in Turkey. The majority of our POWs returned home. And yes, you correctly mentioned Israel and a number of other countries. I will be frank with you. We talked from the outset of the war, from the very beginning of this full-scale invasion, and even before that, because we have many political prisoners like Crimean Tatars that have been incarcerated by the Russian Federation in the Crimea and elsewhere in Russia. We have also many people sitting in prisoner camps on temporary occupied territories in Donetsk and Lugansk oblasts. So we try to talk about that back then during the Normandy format with President Putin and French President Macron was involved, and one of the first exchanges took place back in 2015. Not a single one had an idea that those leaders we talked to would eventually turn into terrorists. And actually, we very much welcome every country's effort, also in Asia, in the East, to help us with this mediation. And we're happy about that.
Well, the prisoner swap certainly marked an important part in the crisis. We understand that Saudi Crown Prince, that he played a personal role in guaranteeing that the prisoner swap went as planned. So what can you tell us about his role in this mediation?
I'm thankful to the Crown Prince for this very safe exchange of POWs. Russia, the Russian Federation, didn't want to release foreign nationals to us, just not to show political wins and gains of Ukraine. So that way, Russia wanted, they tried to look into us, figure out who we are as political leaders of Ukraine. And they failed, obviously. They were not sure how it will work. Meanwhile, for me, it is important that every man, every woman who fights for Ukraine, who helps Ukraine, it doesn't matter the country he or she is national of, we value everyone. So given the ties that the Crown Prince has been having with Russia, probably it was, a good chance of success, and I'm very much thankful to him for this brilliant result.
Of course, one concerning issue we've seen in the ongoing crisis is that Russia seems to have recently escalated the use of Iranian kamikaze drones in the ongoing crisis. Now, as we know, Iranian missiles and drones have also been used to specifically target civilians and oil facilities in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Now, this is something that Saudi has warned against them in the past. So today, what message do you think Tehran is trying to give Ukraine? And conversely, what do you want the Iranian regime to know?
It is sad that we have to recognize that the Iranian government is as lying as the Russian Federation government is, because we had contact with Iran's leaders at the topmost level. We talked to the embassy. We had the ambassadors called up to the Minister of External Affairs, and we were assured that nothing was sold to Russia, it wasn't their drones, and nothing of the kind. And meanwhile, we have been able to capture down a lot of those drones. So it's already not about, you know, empty talks about referendums and someone's plans to, you know, end the war the way they want. It's about a clear fact. We have the number of these downed Iranian drones, and these have been sold to Russia to kill our people. And they are, you're right, they are being used against civilian infrastructure and civilians, peaceful civilians. Because of that, we sent Iranian diplomats away from the country. We have nothing to talk with them about. So it's lies.
Now, other comments we've seen in recent days, Chechnya's president has come out and said that Russia should use more radical measures against Ukraine. Now, he has suggested the use of a low-power nuclear missile. How would Ukraine defend itself against something like that? And how much of a concern is it for the international community that nuclear weapons are talked about being used in this conflict?
Some of these statements.
This statement that you mentioned, I don't think it's at the level that I should respond to. I think I should respond at the level of a president, maybe. Maybe when it is a parliamentarian republic, to someone at the level of prime minister. I can also talk to journalists because I feel that they're at the same level with me, but answering some, you know, statements from a terrorist who even was not elected by his own people, a terrorist who says something about nuclear armaments, this is not serious. Come on, in modern world, how can someone threaten others with nuclear weapons? Yeah, we have lots of terrorists worldwide. We have killers, but I cannot condescend to talking to any terrorists like that.
Now, in a recent poll from Arab News and YouGov, we found that at least when it comes to the Arab world, people are blaming NATO and President Biden's administration for they're saying they are the ones to blame for this war. So do you agree that if NATO had accelerated your application, of course, Ukraine has been waiting for membership since back in the 1990s, do you believe that this war would never have happened?
Well, I was a student back in the 90s. I can tell you my personal take of it. Back in the 90s, there was no such big support of the alliance in Ukraine, first. Secondly, I truly think that should Ukraine be a NATO member, there wouldn't be this war. But I can tell you, when I was a student, we also were talking about that. I was studying law, and everyone seem to understand that whenever Ukraine becomes a NATO member, Russia will launch a war. But now I think, yes, should Ukraine be a NATO member state, there wouldn't be a war. But if Ukraine would be NATO members back in the 90s, I think risks would be high for this war to happen. And the last thing, I think it's just to say that we already earned our membership in NATO. And I think if Ukraine would be accepted there and in the EU, probably it would not draw that much aggression from Russia, and Ukraine would be another country. And it would serve another measure of greater security. I think Ukraine has earned this right to be a member of the EU and in the NATO as a security alliance quite some time ago. And again, we have strong support from the United States and Biden administration and Congress are supporting and assisting us. And truly, this war was started by Russia, and Russia is the only one to blame. What else could the United West do to avoid it? Maybe they could do more, but to blame the United States, the war is because of them. This is not just, this is not true. Only Russia is guilty of that.
So even with NATO membership, you feel this war was inevitable under President Putin. Now, you had some interesting comments at Davos this year. You talked about investment opportunities in order to rebuild Ukraine. You said that countries or global companies would have the opportunity to help sponsor entire cities or sectors in Ukraine. Can you tell us more about this program, and are you in talks with any Arab governments about these investment opportunities?
Sorry, just to end the piece about NATO, your first words that the risk of war under President Putin would still be there. Yes, it could be, but again, back in the 90s, Russia was not as sure, as brazenly sure, right after the breakdown of the USSR. It was the time when countries from republics of the USSR were gaining independence, and Russia was not that concentrated, the power was not that concentrated. And because of that, they were more democratic. They were not that autocratic at the time. And because of that, they used to have opposition inside the country, and the risks of war would be much less than now. But well, now, what can we say? If we talk about condition that if Ukraine becomes a NATO member, Russia will start war, this is no longer working, not performing. So we see what is happening now. As regards your main question, I think there will be enough place in Ukraine for everyone willing to help, for every country, for every company. And it will be possible for every country to present their recovery efforts and contributions as the state. And there will be a possibility for private companies, for Arab countries as well, because it is about rebuilding, recovering the whole of the state of the nation. Unfortunately, we have ruin in all the walks of life, in all the pieces of life here, be it healthcare, be it bridges, be it electric power generation, and take our power plants. So lots of avenues to explore, and we would really love to see Arab businesses and Arab countries to be present and working in our country. We are ready to offer wonderful terms and conditions for businesses, fiscal and so on. And there is also one ambitious aim for every country willing to come to Ukraine with an idea of recovery. It will be, you know, coming here for good, for doing something good, not to violate our integrity, but for doing something, for making something happen, being rebuilt. And this will come up as a very big economic project in 21st century.
Some big investment opportunities. President Zelensky, thank you very much for joining us today on Frankly Speaking. We appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure for me. Thank you for your support.
Now, it is important to note that since the beginning of this war, Arab News has reached out numerous times to various Russian officials for comment. Now, we also recently reached out to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs official spokesperson, Maria Zakharova, to appear with us here on Frankly Speaking. Now, sadly, all of our interview requests have so far fallen on deaf ears. However, we wish to reiterate that in our adherence to our professional duty, Ms. Zakharova's invitation to appear on this program remains open. And we look forward to having her on the show whenever she accepts.